Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd in Season 8, Episode 23. And Dave, before we get into what's going on as the Steelers get ready to take on the Bears this week at Soldier Field, and Eric Edholm is going to join us. He's a good buddy of mine. Give us our Bears preview. I have to say I have been overwhelmed and touched with the emails we've gotten when we spoke on Friday and on Monday, asking kind of for a roll call for listeners outside of the U.S. And it has been, you know, we've gotten notes that aren't just, hey, this is Luis in Mexico City or Wayne in Australia. We've gotten just, you know, unbelievably kind and gracious notes from people literally all over the world. And I'm going to make sure I have a list, and I'm trying to email each one of these people back. But I just can't thank our listeners for the kind words they've given us, and just saying hello from Israel and Singapore and Mexico City. And our thoughts are with the people in Mexico after the earthquake. So many people in Germany and in the UK, Northern Ireland, Australia. I mean, it's just and Nigeria. It's unbelievable.
I tell you, hey, like I say almost every time, it's real sobering to you know, you just don't we do this thing three times a week sometimes, and you and I get on, and it just feels like you and I having a phone conversation more than anything. You know, one stable guy and one unstable guy. We'll let the listeners decide who is who there. But some days it might be tough. But you know, to actually see, you know, over the course of what, 8 years, how much this thing has grown. And you know, when I first approached you to start this thing, you know, I never in my life did I imagine it would have kind of the you know, reach as far as it actually has. So yeah, you know, you look at the stats and all like that of who listens, and it really doesn't register as much until you get, you know, the emails and the Twitter responses and people reaching out the way they have. So absolutely do appreciate it. But yeah, it's mind blowing when you read some of these things.
Yeah, and I saw a bunch of tweets to you from people from Brazil, and yeah, it's just crazy. We didn't hear from anybody in China, we didn't hear from anybody in Russia, and certainly there are plenty of other countries we didn't hear from anybody. But in terms of mapping the globe, I think we, you know, there were some in Africa, which surprised me a little bit. We heard, as I mentioned, Singapore, of course, Central and South America, and all through the Western Europe and a couple in Eastern Europe. Just really just stunning stuff. So thank you. And if there are a couple of folks out there who want to chime in still, let us know, and we'll put another pin in the map. And as I say, I will try to get an email out to all of you, and thanks so much. So let's get into it. The Steelers do play the Bears on Sunday, 1 o'clock at Soldier Field. It's been cataloged pretty well if you're following what's going on this week. The Steelers have not had much success in Chicago, only one win ever in 1995, Dave. Mike Tomlin spoke yesterday. Why don't you bring us up to date on the injury report, and a lot of question marks behind names this week.
Yeah, and also, yeah, we got a few from the continent of Canada as well, too.
Oh, right, yeah, the Canadians. And yeah, well, a very sweet email from a younger guy, a French-Canadian guy who's working on his English. So keep working on it, man. You're doing a great job.
Yeah, am I doing a great job as well, too, in my English?
Well, that's the thing. He said his English has improved from listening to us.
Lord. I hope it's from listening to you and not me. All right, enough of the shenanigans there. Mike Tomlin did indeed address the media on Tuesday, as he normally does, recap the health of the team, but, you know, ahead of the game against the Bears this week. Tomlin said that left right tackle Marcus Gilbert, hamstring, is currently dealing with that, and he suffered it against the Vikings. It might result in him being limited in practice this week. It was reported that Gilbert during the game was suffering from cramping, I believe. I think there was a shot of him working on a bicycle, on a stationary bike on the side, and him having to exit the game forced Alejandro Villanueva back into the game, which in turn forced Chris Hubbard over to right tackle there as well. Tom also said the same can be said about Jesse James with that ankle. Jesse James, as we said on the podcast the other day, looked like he hurt that ankle on the first play from scrimmage against the Vikings. He was able to finish the game. And we'll see what happens this week. Sounds like he might be limited during the early stages of practice, but right now I would kind of expect him to play. We'll see what happens with Gilbert. Those hamstrings can be tricky there. Defensive end Stephon Tuitt, Tomlin said, will work a little bit during the upcoming week. He has a potential to play against the Bears, and Tomlin said the same goes for outside linebacker T.J. Watt with that groin. Tomlin said, we'll be having that conversation about Stephon Tuitt until we're not having that conversation about Stephon Tuitt. They're going to work him a little bit throughout the course of the week and base his participation during the week based on his previous day's performance and his feel, and push forward toward game day. There's a potential for him to play. Same can be said for T.J. Watt with his groin. We'll see. Now, Tuitt was on, had his nightly spot or weekly spot last night on ESPN 970, glowing positive. Everything with him coming out of his mouth was, working towards playing a better week this week than he had last week, but he stopped short of guaranteeing that he would play. So we'll keep an eye on that. If I'm the Steelers and he's not 100, or if he's not at least 95%, of himself, and he doesn't feel as comfortable being able to defend himself, I sit him again this week. They can play without him, and it'll be interesting to see what happens when this first injury report comes out later on today. Safety J.J. Wilcox is still in concussion protocol as of Tuesday, according to Tomlin. One would think and hope that maybe he's removed from that as early as today and can resume practicing. Tight end Vance McDonald, who missed the game against the Vikings with a back injury, Tomlin said that back is perking up this week. I would expect him to as long as there's no setback, to be able to play against the Bears. And then
London is the capital.
Tomlin was asked about Alejandro Villanueva and really doesn't suspect that the illness that he had this past week that caused him to lose reportedly 20 pounds, according to Ramon Foster, and of course forced him from the game for quite a bit on Sunday against the Vikings there. He doesn't expect that to be an issue. Tomlin, however, did not mention Gerald Hawkins, who has missed the first two games. He was going to be inactive anyway, but officially ruled out with a knee injury the first two games. Tomlin didn't mention him, but Tomlin closed up the questioning by saying, all injured players have a chance of playing Sunday against the Bears. And, that's Tomlin and is always glass half full.
Yeah. So if you were going to pick a guy that you wanted to bet on playing in the game of the first four, I think Wilcox will end up playing. I think he'll be out in practice today. So I'm guessing that he's going to be good to go. But of the first four, Tuitt, Gilbert, Watt, and, Jesse James, give me a most likely, least likely.
Well, I think very likely for Jesse James, being as how he was able to finish in that game. Yep. let's see.
I'm with you, and I don't think the other three play. That would be my guess today.
I just don't know enough about Tuitt's situation there. I would bet against Tuitt as we sit here, before the first injury report is released, just because I don't see a need to rush it with him. Even if he's 85-90%, I'm not sure I play him. So I would bet against him playing as we sit here today. Let's see, who was the other ones? Gilbert, unable to finish, and you had to send Villanueva back in the game. That's tough. I'll bet Gilbert plays, and then I'll bet what was the last one?
T.J. Watt.
Yeah, I'll bet T.J. Watt plays. He didn't seem to be too concerned about that groin injury after
I hope you're right. And the Villanueva story was an interesting one. I guess, you know, we talked about, look, Ali didn't have a good game, and nobody's going to make excuses, and he's going to be the last one. This didn't come from him, but I think it was Ramon Foster who mentioned that he was sick during the week and actually lost 20 pounds. And, you know, yeah, he weighs 300 pounds, so losing 20 is a less lower percentage of his body weight. But you would think about if that's actually accurate, and I don't know if it is, but that is an extraordinary amount of weight to lose in a couple days. Ali's one of those guys who probably has to work pretty hard to keep his weight up during the season because he's, you know the story. He's an Army Ranger. He's a fit guy, so he's not just mass. And so, you know, that's probably part of the reason that he struggled a bit on Sunday. Hopefully he's back to 100% for the game on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. And, boy, you're going to be eating a lot of calories, a lot of bread, maybe some pizzas mixed in there as well, too. Look, he has not had the greatest start of the regular season. But with that said, you know, people have said, boy, they shouldn't have paid him all that money. You know, people keep saying that you know, Steelers overpaid Alejandro Villanueva. That couldn't be the furthest thing from the truth with him. When you look at the guaranteed money involved, even if Villanueva was to just fall flat on his face this season, the Steelers really could get out of that contract without much in the way of dead money. So I don't know who where these silly narratives come up with. I venture. Some of them probably from media. The others, people get on the message boards or whatnot, I guess. But, look, I am not worried about Alejandro Villanueva right now. Is Alejandro Villanueva going to go to the Pro Bowl this year? Probably not. Is Alejandro Villanueva ever going to be the technician that, say, a Joe Thomas is? Yeah, probably not. Can Alejandro Villanueva still be a top 10, 8, 7, left tackle in this league? I think there's a good chance. I don't, you know, it's easy to give him a pass because what happened against the Vikings, but let's not forget that guy that was lining up against him on the other side isn't too shabby. And I think even a 20-pound heavier Villanueva has a little bit of problems with him, as would a lot of tackles around the league as well, too. So, no, I'm not worried one bit about Alejandro Villanueva. Just watch that game the other night, David, between the Lions and the Giants. Watch the left tackle play by both those guys. And great.
Oh, God, it was awful. And by the way, and the Vikings tackle play was awful in that game.
Yeah, Greg Robinson and Eric Flowers. Go watch that game and come back and report to me what you think about.
Two top 10 picks, right? Robinson went 2 overall. I think Flowers went maybe 9. Maybe Flowers went later, but definitely first round.
Yeah, go watch all 22 of that. Come back and complain about Alejandro Villanueva.
All right. So that brings us up to date on the injury report. Dave, let's talk a little bit about what Mike Tomlin said. And there wasn't a ton of stuff. Mike was relatively positive, you know, as he usually is. And I think to me, one of the more interesting things he said was talking about the running game. And he felt like the running game made strides. And he said the only thing we were missing was the splash play. Now, that's like, you know, I mean, that's what you're looking for. So it is a big – and it's the hardest thing to get. So it's not like I'm trying to think of a good analogy. It's like the only thing we're missing from the great sports car was the wheels.
The engine.
Yeah, right. Yeah, even better, the engine, right. Yeah, we're missing the engine.
That's like them NASCAR guys after they wreck. They say, after they leave a race, we was running great today until the engine blew up. You know?
Until the engine blew. Right. Very good. That's a good analogy. So yeah. So it's not a small thing. I get where he's coming from, but I thought that was an interesting take from his viewpoint, because I really thought the Vikings defenders did do it, and I pointed this out during the game, did a really good job of keeping Le'Veon Bell from getting the edge. And look, Bell's a guy who can run between the tackles. We've seen that plenty of times. That's where he gets most of the yards. But he'll catch the edge now and then and get 9 up the sideline. And he had trouble doing that in this game.
You know, I went back. The All 22 is late this week, but I have now. The best thing about it is you can pull up. They have a play search where you can pull up just runs and do it by player and all like that. I made sure last night ahead of this podcast to pull up all the runs by Le'Veon Bell. The Vikings did a great job of filling gaps. They really, really did. You know, that defense is underrated, man. I mean, that not enough credit, I don't think, is being given to the Vikings defensive play in that game against the Steelers on Sunday. I really thought they did a good job, not only in the pass rush and coverage, but they really did a good job, I thought, of filling gaps. And Le'Veon Bell and that offensive line had to really earn every yard that they got there. The Steelers tried to run a couple outside zone runs. You can tell that's not been worked on quite a bit, or either that or the Vikings are really good at flowing down the line to defend those. As you stated a couple of times there, it even looked on some of those outside counters or those split zone runs that blocks were made the way they should have been. But, the free man was always there to clean it up for the Vikings on the edge as well, too. Now, were there missed blocks? Was the offensive line play perfect throughout the game as a whole? No, absolutely not. There are definitely some gaffes there. But I think Tomlin was right to say that things are going in the right direction there. I wouldn't go as far to say greatly improved. I forget exactly how he framed it there. But there were strides made there. And look, I mean, Le'Veon Bell looks like Le'Veon Bell to me. I've watched him since his rookie year. No discernible difference as far as I can tell right now. And he's not something we've said since Le'Veon Bell's been in the league. Not a guy that really produces a lot of splash plays regardless. I mean, it'd be nice to get some of these, but splash play for Le'Veon Bell is really 10 to 15 yards, not so much over 15 yards.
Yeah, he's not Babe Ruth in it. He's not taking all that many to the house from the other side of midfield. So, but we've seen over the last 2 years a 4.9 yard carry average, 3.2 on Sunday, so well below that average, and we'll see if things get straightened out against the Bears. And what else caught your attention from Mike or from Ben when they spoke yesterday?
Boy, it's weird to see all these narratives from 1 week to the next. First was Ben threw a total, and I think this was penalties included, 5 deep balls against the Cleveland Browns in week 1. People were clamoring, that's not enough. Why wasn't he throwing more? You turn around this week, and Ben has, including penalties, 10 deep balls down the field. People are saying, oh, that's way too much. What's he doing there? People were creating stats on Twitter at me saying, he's throwing way past the chains on third down, this, that, and the other. I thought Ben did a good job of explaining why they did what they did. With that said, were there maybe one or two deep shots too many there where he probably could have gone underneath? And I'm not talking about third down here, because if you go back and look, Ben did not, I think only 2 passes were thrown more than 5 yards past the needed amount of yards needed on third downs in that game. But were there some instances there where he bypassed maybe a Juju or a Jesse James for acceptable yardage underneath? Absolutely. But as we kidded the other day, you don't have to invite Ben too many times to take a deep shot on you down the field. And the fact that Mike Tomlin was asked on Tuesday, does he think his offense relies too much on pass interference penalties, was just really incredible.
It's a bad question. I mean, you can't set up and try to you don't play for a penalty by the opposition.
No, you don't. That's a byproduct of your guys potentially being better than their guys and being able to beat them over the top. Like Mike Tomlin said, what are you going to do? If you going to let 10 run by you, or are you going to tackle him? That sort of thing there. that's why Ben's not afraid to take the deep shots either. And as we said, Ben's numbers as a whole over the first two games, you know, total yardage, probably looks a little bit pedestrian at right around 500 there. But if you add in the three pass interference calls there of over 100 yards, then you get into where he's averaging just over 300 yards there. And another aspect of it, really needs to be looked at. We talk about explosive plays all the time and the talk stat and how much they play a role in, along with turnovers each and every game. Man, if you get a pass interference penalty of more than 20 yards or more, that should go into books as an explosive play because it moved the chains 20 yards or more, and that's the whole aspect of explosive plays is how important of role they play, and especially when you get one 40, 50 yards or something like that. I mean, it can really change a drive, and we certainly saw that was the case against the Vikings on Sunday there. So, look, I mean, when things aren't perfect, we try to nitpick at times, not only David and I, but probably as a fan base as well too. But let's make sure we're sticking to the facts here. Ben is not going deep too often on third and short situations.
Well, we talked about this in week two last year when the Steelers played the 49ers, and they took some shots on third and one. They got man coverage on the outside, and they hit a couple of these passes from huge gains, a touchdown, I think, to AB down the right sideline. And I made a point in that game of saying, let's just remember these plays when it doesn't work later in the season, because there are going to be times it doesn't work later in the season. So it's just one of those things. It's a calculated gamble. Sure, you can try to hit the cross, or you can run the ball. You can do a variety of different things and try to move the chains. But the flip side of that is you don't often get the look of AB outside in single coverage without safety help over the top. And when you see that, you say, I think my guy's better than their guy. And 95% of the time, he's going to beat him, and then it's a question of whether we can execute the play. So that's the logic behind it, that you don't get those – you don't get those opportunities on first and 10 or second and 7 to have that matchup. And you may only get it when it's third and one. And when you see it, you often want to take advantage of it.
Yeah, and I thought Ben answered the question the best during his Tuesday morning interview on the Fan there. Talked about all the deep shots that he took. He says kind of their double-edged sword, talking about the Vikings defense. Their secondary plays very tight. Their safeties are down. We definitely saw that. There are a lot of quarters coverage in there as well too. And then Ben goes on to say they entice you to throw the deep ball, but to throw the deep ball, you got to be able to sit in the pocket for a little bit longer than normal. The ball is not coming out that quick, so they count on the pass rush to get there, and it was creating pressure, and we saw the Vikings were creating pressure. Ben goes on to say there's a couple sacks, but even on top of that, there were some hurry throws. I had to hurry some throws, and that's because they were creating issues in the pocket, and so they kind of give you the deep ball if you can block it.
Okay. What else was Mike asked about?
Mike Tomlin on Debo.
he danced niftily through the hole on that one, as the question, if you missed it, was, has James Harrison fallen on the depth chart? And Mike responded with, has James Harrison fallen or have other guys ascended? And he quickly pointed to Anthony Ciccolo and the two sacks he had against the Browns and the opportunity to play him. He went on to talk about James Harrison being an important contributor and a guy that they expect to rely on later in the season. He'll have an opportunity and expect him to be ready and to contribute at his highest level. So I think the answer was exactly kind of what you would expect. You don't expect Mike Harrison to denigrate one of his own players who wasn't on the field. Rather, he said the guys who were out there had earned the opportunity and they'd played well, so they got the chance. And we're happy to have James waiting in the wings.
Yeah, were you a bit surprised that when Watt came off, Ciccolo was the guy that replaced him?
Sure.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised too. Now, had Ciccolo not had the game that he had in week one, does that happen?
No, probably not.
So this is just kind of a fluid situation is what I'm kind of chalking it up to right now. I don't have an issue with Tomlin's response and going with the hot hand there. Tomlin, though, saying that, you know, we choose not to, I forget exactly how he worded it, you know, we choose not to tip our hand, gamemanship and all, as far as letting people know. I think with a guy like James Harrison, can't you at least, you know, give him a little high sign or something? You know, that he's probably not next up. Now, according to Ben earlier on Tuesday, Ben was asked if he talked to Harrison about, you know, not playing in the game, and Harrison was, you know, in Ben's opinion, kind of clueless as to why that was. So, may, you know, could there be a little bit better communication in there? You know, I don't know. I don't think Debo's going to walk off and go throw a tantrum. I mean, he's obviously would like to be out on the field contributing, and he will at some point. Make no mistake, there's going to be, unfortunately or fortunately, a time where Debo's going to probably have to play 30, 40, 50 snaps in a game. But the time maybe is not right now. And here, I threw this out after writing some of that up yesterday, David. Let's assume, and that's always dangerous when you and I get to assuming. Let's assume, regardless of what happens with Tua, let's assume TJ Watt. I'm going to keep calling TJ Watt JJ Watt for a
while. We've both done it plenty of times.
Let's assume TJ Watt's able to overcome that groin injury and suit up and play this week. And let's assume Wilcox and McDonald are ready to go as well. Let's keep, you know, Tua it down. Who else is down? Let's keep Gerald Hawkins down. And let's say Gilbert's able to play too. Who's that seventh inactive now? Is there, like, what I'm getting at is we think that Dobbs,
the two linemen, Hunter,
the two linemen, Hunter, Tuitt, who are we missing here? One defensive back, either Wilcox
or Brian Allen,
or
probably.
Brian Allen is down. So that's six. Are you going to dress all nine linebackers again like you did last week against the Vikings? And if you don't, who is the odd man out?
Well, I'll just take a bet that Watt or Gilbert isn't able to go, so that'll be the answer. But the odd man out is,
but I said assuming those guys.
It's dangerous. You know, it's one or two guys. It has to be Stevie Johnson or Arthur Motes. I mean, it's not going to be James. They're not going to sit James Harrison.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. Why is there a possibility it could be James Harrison? Why wouldn't it be James Harrison?
I don't think they'll do it. I don't think they'll sit James Harrison.
I mean, he doesn't play special teams for you, right?
No, but you know, I was looking at the numbers just for this purpose. I think Motes played four special teams plays, so you can find those somewhere else.
Okay, all right. I'm just throwing it out there. I'm not saying that's going
to happen. Yeah, I would be shocked if James Harrison ever got a, you know, didn't dress coach's decision.
So you think there's zero chance Harrison is not on the inactive list outside of injury all season?
Zero chance that he's on the inactive list. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to go slightly higher. I'll take the over on that. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but when you start going down this thing, and if he is indeed behind Anthony Chiccolo, and the odds going into every game are that he's not going to play that many snaps, or if any snaps. I mean, you talk about Motes playing four special team snaps the other day. Well, James Harrison has played four total defense snaps in two games. So,
right.
You know, that
right.
That
and
that,
I think Motes only got, what did he get, two snaps or one snap in the game? So he's not ahead of him by much. He did get more, but not by much.
Right. But he does play special teams. Not a lot, but he's going to be able to give that to you more than you know, whatever snaps is more than James Harrison is going to give you.
What's interesting is that we're not, and I know you agree with me on this, but the idea, they're not going to sit Rosie Nix or Watson or, you know, nobody else on that offense is going to sit. It's clear, you know, that Hunter's the odd guy out in the receiving group. We haven't talked about Vance McDonald at all. We assume he's going to be back and ready to go. So that'll give you an extra tight end. But that was one guy we failed to mention on the injury report. You know, he had a back issue. He worked out before the game on Sunday pretty vigorously. So, you know, take that for what you will. I wouldn't expect him to be on the injury report today.
Yeah, and I didn't mention him at the top. I said,
Tom, sorry.
I said Tomlin said his back was perking up this week. But look, that's a lot of assumptions that we made. I mean, the stars have to line up perfectly with a few of those guys: Gilbert, Watt, and you know McDonald and Wilcox. I think are really the main four there. That if all four of those guys, would need to dress in order for us to probably have this conversation about whether or not James Harrison might be a candidate for the inactive list. So we'll see how that goes by. You know, and like I said, I'm not advocating Debo being on the inactive list, but if he is indeed down the depth chart the way he is right now, I could see a situation maybe where that happens once or twice this year. What else did Mike say that caught your eye?
Mike was not asked about the decision to eschew the field goal and leave the ball on the 1 yard line. And we got a fair number of responses from our readers to the question that we were talking about on Monday. And I would say it was pretty 50-50. I mean, the logic from the people who wanted to keep the Vikings pinned on the one certainly makes sense that, you know, they're unlikely to drive 99 yards. It's going to take some time and you're still going to get good field position. And maybe there's an off chance you get the safety. I get it. I still think Boswell's odds of hitting from 47 yards are extremely high, in the 90% range in those conditions on Sunday. So, yeah, you know, we'll agree to disagree. But I think it was relatively evenly split down the middle of what people would have done.
Boy, that's why we need you there at them press conferences, because that would have been the first question asked. Why don't you just go down there and start walking in? Ain't nobody gonna see
you. I thought about it.
Y'all just show up. What are they gonna do?
They won't let me in the building. Yeah. They'd be like, you don't have ID, you're not going in the building.
Yeah, just make.
I say, hey, Art, there's Art, Mr. Rooney.
he knows me.
Right.
Let's see. I'm trying to think. What else really stuck out there?
We were talking about linebackers, and let's get to this because we're gonna get to our Bears conversation in a little bit. The Lawrence Timmons situation, I don't know that it's any clearer for those who didn't hear yesterday or early yesterday evening. He was suspended indefinitely by the Dolphins, Dave, and I haven't seen anything today that's new, so I hope I didn't miss anything. But you have to think that they're thinking about the financial implications and what they can get from the guaranteed money that they've dealt with Timmons here. I mean, this is going to be a for-cause thing, and they could try to potentially void the entire contract. It's a tough story because, you know, we're both big fans of what Lawrence Timmons did here as a Steeler, Mike Tomlin's first ever draft pick. It's an odd story because we still don't know anything more. As far as I can tell, Timmons hasn't spoken to the media. We don't know anything more than the original story that he was at LAX and apparently trying to fly to Pittsburgh. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it's still very, very, very bizarre, and you're right. I mean, a little bit still coming out here. There's one source saying they don't think it's CTE related. In that TMZ story, they said he was wanting to go to Pittsburgh to see his daughter. It's just so uncharacteristic. When you're talking about Timmons here, and bizarre, and it really makes you wonder what the rest of this story really is. Is here with him, several people on Twitter saying, "Well, this is just Timmons, visiting Pittsburgh the week prior while they were on the bye, and longing for home, and now he's pulling a LeGarrette Blount to get himself out of Miami." Man, if that's what Timmons is doing, I'd be very, very disappointed in him to do something like that to get yourself you know, released or whatnot. And plus, I just don't see him doing it on purpose anyway, because he stands to lose, you know, roughly around $4 million if some of these reports are right, because, you know, that's the portion of the 2018 base salary that supposedly was guaranteed. And if you go and get yourself suspended, you know, there's a good chance you violate that guarantee. And now that the Dolphins, I don't think Adam Gase would just willy-nilly issue out a indefinite suspension, but he can only be, you know, suspended without pay for four games, according to the CBA there. But you wouldn't think Adam Gase would just do this, you know, off the cuff here. So there's evidently some cause there from, and hopefully he just didn't fly off the handle without knowing all the facts here, but there's probably some cause there. And then later on Tuesday, the Saints went out and traded for linebacker Stephon Anthony from the Saints.
Yeah, the Dolphins traded for him, yep.
The Dolphins traded for him, and that alone lets you wonder, and if these reports about that guaranteed money now being violated in 2018 with Timmons, man, Timmons might not even be on that roster 4 weeks from now. And
I don't think Timmons will be on the roster on Saturday. I'll be surprised if he's on the roster on Thursday. This guy comes and passes the physical. They meet with, you know, talk to the NFL about what the financial ramifications are. There was an article written by one of the beat writers, and I can't remember which one now, on Monday, who just said, or maybe it was even Sunday night, who said, look, it's, you know, basically tell me again, I'm drawing a blank on the Gase basically has two rules: be on time and play hard. And he said Adam Gase came in last year, and the biggest thing he did is he changed the culture around this organization. They've been floundering, and Gase came in and really did a good job of doing that. And they do things differently. They spent their money this offseason re-signing their own players rather than going out and making a splash in the free agent market. And the guy was very laudatory about Gase, and he said this is going to be a real challenge to his structure and his leadership, because Timmons is a guy who has a spotless track record of what he's done in Pittsburgh. Things were fine here in Miami, but this is such an egregious violation of what's going on. And I'm sure Gase knows what happened now at this point. I'm sure there have been conversations with whether Adam Gase has had them, but I'm sure plenty of people in the organization have had conversations with Lawrence Timmons. I'm sure the doctors have. You know, immediately Timmons expressed a desire to get back practicing and playing. So, you know, he seemed to be of sound mind at that point. But I'm with you. I don't think there's it didn't even cross my mind that he was doing this in order to get out of his deal, somehow get released by the Vikings. Because, yeah, that's just such a conspiracy theory kind of idea. I guess it's possible, but it just doesn't make any sense to me to do that. So, yeah, they suspended him indefinitely because they didn't want to say 2 weeks, because anytime you put a time frame on it, it looks like the guy will be reinstated at that point in time. And I don't think there's any chance now that Lawrence Timmons ever plays a game for the Dolphins. And it'll be interesting to see what happens. So, Dave, then I got asked when I said that on Twitter, would the Steelers sign him? Is Lawrence Timmons toxic now?
Well, I mean, we obviously still don't know why he did what he did, but let's go with what we think we know. I say no, he's not toxic, and I don't think he's toxic to the Steelers either. Now, obviously, my main concern, and I think most fans' main concern should be, is this guy right in the head right now? Is this anything related to, you know, too many shots to the head over the years?
You'll see, or, you know, we're just speculating, or something else.
It
doesn't have to just be, maybe he had a mental illness. Maybe there was, you know, induced by something. Who knows? But yes, I think that's the right thing. That's the right question.
Maybe he's bipolar and didn't take his medicine that day or whatnot. You know, we don't. Something like that really points to something really, like that. But just speculation on my part. No, I don't think he's toxic. Yes, I think he can still play. And no, I don't think you can rule him out returning to the Steelers.
You think you would say if he's released and you know, the story doesn't appear to be anything too damaging, that there's a chance in the 2017 season he could play for the Steelers?
I'm saying there's a chance.
Interesting. Interesting. Now look,
I mean, you could even trade for that right now, you know, and I mean, look at his contract. I mean, a million something base salary is all what Timmons was scheduled to earn this year. And and if he violated his contract with the guarantees in the second year, you assume that as well too. So in other words, you could rent him for $1 million a year, or you could wait for him to get cut and get him probably even a little bit cheaper, because I don't think he's would he end up anywhere else? I suppose it's possible. I mean, he already went to Miami, but I think he's done with being other places. I think it's either Pittsburgh or nothing for him moving forward. And do I think it's going to happen? Look, I don't know. To put a percentage on it, I mean, he's still property of the Dolphins right now. I find it a little bit curious. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into it. Why did Bert Lawton say right out of shoot yesterday that the Steelers would not be commenting on Lawrence Timmons? You know,
I think that was so that the media did not ask Mike Tomlin about it.
Yeah, or maybe they just didn't want, you know, maybe they're working on something and didn't want to get accused of tampering or anything like that.
That was for the media.
Yeah, okay, and I'm fine with that as well too. I'm just saying, I don't know what percentage to put on it happening, but I would not. I'll put it to you in this way. I put it to one person on Twitter yesterday. I would not bet my house that it won't happen.
Yeah, I'll put it at zero as well. So, for me, I don't think it'll happen. And the only thing about trading for the contract is the reason I don't think that can happen is the Dolphins don't want to be on the hook for if that legitimizes anything in their guarantee. They're better off just releasing them and voiding the contract. I think they'll be able to do that.
Well, they're going to eat dead money with that signing bonus either way, either releasing them or trading them. Now the aspect comes how much
if
how
the
much
signing bonus if they recoup the whole signing bonus, if it's paid back, I don't know that they eat it.
No, I think they have to eat. I think Timmons might could get forced to for the first four games for that prorated amount have to give that back. But the rest of the signing bonus, I don't think is at jeopardy when it comes to Timmons.
So you don't think if they terminate him, you don't think they can get the whole thing back? They can just get a piece of it back?
Right. Four games worth.
I'm going to just use this as an example, okay? Just to make it an extreme. Let's say Lawrence Timmons committed a heinous crime, and at the same point in time, wouldn't they be able to get the whole signing bonus back?
Oh man, I'd have to look into that.
Yeah, so I don't know that they're limited. So we'll figure it out. So we don't know the details, but all right. So I would think that certainly by this time next week, and I think it'll be before Saturday, they obviously have the roster spot. They got the guy. He'll pass his physical today, so they'll be set. And the story for Pittsburgh people, Mike Hall, local kid who played at Penn State, was the guy who filled in for Timmons in the opener there, and I think he had 10 tackles in that game, and the Dolphins got a win. So a little silver lining for Mike Hall getting the opportunity. Of course, I don't know that he won the Butkus Award, but he was a finalist for that, and it was up in Minnesota and a good special teams player. So maybe he gets more of an opportunity here for the Dolphins.
Yeah, I mean, definitely going to be interesting to watch here moving forward with the Timmons situation kind of on the peripheral there. Also, we were talking about the Steelers' lack of success in Chicago the other day, and I misspoke when I said the one win was the game Bettis went crazy in Chicago. That game was actually at in Pittsburgh. My bad there. For some reason, I keep remembering with the snow and thinking that the backdrop there was Soldier Field, but that was wrong. But the fact remains that they've still only won one of, I think it's 12 trips to Chicago, dating back to 1930-something, you know, as well. Now, I was asked during a radio interview yesterday, well, you know, does this mean anything? I said, no, it's just the kind of stuff that we have to write and talk about because people will write and talk about it, basically. And hopefully we're not forced to write or talk about it on Monday, being you know, one of those issues where, you know, history and you know, Mike Tomlin, quote unquote, playing down to the lesser opponents and that kind of thing. But it is a bit curious that, you know, they've only won one game, you know, in Chicago there. Mike Tomlin has yet to beat the Bears as well, too, since he's been a head coach. One other aspect, I know you jumped on this right away when you heard Ben talk about it on the radio yesterday. Ben was talking about Juju Smith-Schuster and his first touchdown, coming on his first career reception. And Ben said, I'd love at some point when I retire to look back at the list of all the guys that caught their first NFL touchdown from me. I think it would be a pretty cool list. Well, Ben, have no fear. I have you covered, brother. You don't have to wait until you retire. you don't have to wait until you retire. Thanks to the Googles and the internets and Pro Football Reference, I was able to dig that list up fairly quick there. In fact, the list is probably shorter than what did I tell you initially? My
25, 26.
Right. That's what I thought it might be when I responded to you on Twitter there, and the list is actually smaller than that, David. In fact, Juju Smith-Schuster became the 19th different player to score his first NFL career touchdown via a pass from Ben Roethlisberger.
You know, that's funny because I would, if you just asked me that question out of the blue, Ben's in what, season 13 or 14? With, you know, the rotating, well, I guess first matters too. Some of those tight ends who came in were veteran guys. I still probably would have guessed 25 to 30. I would have been up around your number.
Yeah, that's 19. Now someone in the comments has since said Ben, they're saying that he thinks that Ben meant caught their first receiving career touchdown from Ben right. Roethlisberger.
Right.
Okay, and if that's the case, then you have to put Antonio Brown on the list. Remember, Antonio Brown's first career touchdown was what?
The kick return in Tennessee. I was there live. Saw it.
Okay. Now, if you want to talk about his first career receiving touchdown from Ben Roethlisberger, you could put Antonio Brown on that list. You could put Le'Veon Bell on that list. You can put Rashard Mendenhall on that list. And
does this increase it from 19 to 22, or are they included in the 19?
No, these are not included in 19 because I.
Oh yeah, no. So I agree with the comment person that this is their first receiving touchdown.
Okay, well then you can add Antonio to that. You can add Le'Veon Bell to that. You can add Rashard Mendenhall to that, and David, you can add the dump truck to it.
Oh. Well,
Najee Davenport, the dump truck.
That was his. Oh, yeah, I guess that makes sense. He may never have caught a touchdown pass somewhere else.
How's that for a rare?
Yeah, that's a good find. That's a good find.
Rare. That goes in the category of who? What was that question on Seinfeld? Who invaded? And the question was the Moops. you're evidently not a Seinfeld.
Yeah, well, no, I've seen plenty of Seinfeld. That's not a reference I have.
Oh, okay. He says, who invaded Spain in the 8th century? And the card says Moops. And the correct answer is actually the Moors, right?
Right, the Moors, right.
and it was a misprint on the Trivia Pursuit card.
I like it.
But yeah, I found it in some of these names you look at and you think, man, you know, like Nate Washington. You would think Nate Washington would be on that list, but his first career touchdown was not thrown but from Ben Roethlisberger. A few other names, you know, surprisingly, you know, had different quarterbacks as well there. But yeah, 19, if we're only talking about first career touchdown, if we're talking about first career receiving touchdown, then I think you can add four more to that, bump it up to 23.
All right, good stuff. We'll be right back. And as somebody chastised me for saying, you know, welcome back, because there's no delay, we're right back. It's just a radio thing to get us introduced, and I'm going to do it in a second when we have Eric Edholm join us next. Okay, welcome back, and I realize our listeners didn't go anywhere. It's just, as I say, a radio thing. And it is Wednesday, so as always, we get together with a beat writer covering the other team. And this week, our guest is not technically a beat writer, but lives in Chicago and a longtime guy covering the Bears, and a good friend of mine, Eric Edholm, who you can follow on Twitter at Eric, E-R-I-C, underscore his last name, Edholm, E-D-H-O-L-M. I highly recommend him as a follow. Writes for Pro Football Weekly and Fan Rag Sports. Eric, as always, great to talk to you, and thanks for being with us on the Terrible Podcast again.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, the good news is I may not be an official beat writer of the Bears, but those beat writers, they let me drink with them when we go on the road and go out to eat and stuff like that. I'm kind of like a distant cousin that's sort of welcome into the family, I guess.
Friends with benefits.
Yeah, maybe. Well, let's keep it, you know, PG for the family folks out there, right?
Okay, so let's talk about this Bears team that started 0-2. And, you know, John Fox, the head coach, Dow Loggins, the offensive coordinator, Vic Fangio, a name that people in Pittsburgh are very familiar with as the defensive coordinator. Does the seat get hot for John Fox this year if the Bears finish 5-11 or 4-12?
Yeah, I think so. And everybody, I think people are fairly realistic when the schedule came out and they saw, oh, geez, Atlanta at home week one. You know, we've got a tough game at Tampa week two, Steelers week three, short week four on the road at Green Bay. I mean, that's, you know, it doesn't get a whole lot tougher first four than that. And, you know, 18 game span or whatever it is, and you know, 18 day span, I should say. And 0-4 was very much a possibility, no matter who was the quarterback, no matter what improvements they made. So I think everybody, they kind of want to see what those final 12, I'm not saying they expect to lose every, you know, the next two games for sure, but they're saying realistically, let's see how the final 12 games go. And that will help determine Fox's fate, I think, in a big way.
So the offseason, the big news is the Bears move up from 3-2 to take Mitch Trubisky. And they gave up, you know, a big chunk to do that. There was a pretty high price to pay. What was your thought about the move at the time? And what have you thought of Trubisky since he's been in the organization?
Yeah, I think it was obviously a surprise because they'd gone out and got Mike Glennon, and everybody realistically knew that the Glennon deal was in essence a 1-year deal. I know the
right,
you know, the window draft numbers, 3 years, $45 million. Everybody freaked out at that, but when you looked at the details, you realized this is a prove it year for Mike Glennon.
Sure,
but even with that, I think it was surprising to see them make sure to ward off any possible, you know, other teams coming up and leapfrogging them. The 49ers did a good job of suggesting they might be interested in Trubisky. Okay, let's give up those picks and move up. And, you know, typically those deals come at a big cost, and they did. And when you looked at the Bears draft as a whole, I mean, you thought, oh my gosh, they got a running back from North Carolina A&T. They got a tight end from Ashland College. You know, right. They got a safety in Eddie Jackson who barely played his last 2 years because of crazy injuries. You know, they drafted a guard from Kutztown State. I mean, it just looked like risk after risk after risk after risk. But, okay, look, Tariq Cohen has been very good for the most part. You know, he's been an exciting player. They're still high on Shaheen. They've got, you know, Eddie Jackson starting in the secondary. And Trubisky has come a long way since the beginning of camp. So I think it's looked a little better, even in an 0-2 start, and the people clearly want Mitch. They want to see what this kid can do once he sort of lets it rip.
Eric, when you look at this, when you look at the Bears coming out of that game against Tampa, it looks like that offensive line is banged up quite a bit. What's the status on Sitton right now? I know Compton, I think, had to leave that game the other day as well, too, there. And, you know, is there any chance that Long, you know, going to see some time in the near future. And obviously their wide receivers have been banged up as well, too. Is former Steelers wide receiver Marcus Wheaton, is this the week for him?
Yeah, I mean, it really does feel like we've got a lot of injuries here that all of a sudden the Bears are dealing with. They've got crushed a wide receiver, too. They're, you know, including Wheaton, and he hasn't been able to go because of that pinky injury. And there's a feeling that he might be able to go and, I suppose, make this the revenge game. There's no other angle like that, I think, in this one. But, but yeah, so they're going to be thin at wide receiver no matter what. The offensive line was thought to be a strength coming into the year. You know, that interior three played really well last year. And the idea that Long might be a great guard, and you've got Sitton, and you've got Cody Whitehair, you know, especially with Cam Hayward playing well, everybody coming into the year sort of said, hey, this could be the best part of this team right here offensively. But, yeah, those injuries are a worry, and they've had to shuffle around. You know, they fixed one position by changing two, you know, moving guys around from the interior. Hieronymus Grassou's come in as well, and, you know, Whitehair's had to move the guard, and so – it's just been a musical chairs up front. You know, the Bucs only had one sack on Sunday, but it was a big one. It was a strip sack. And, you know, two of the four interceptions came with pressure, and they were rushing four. This was not a big blitz effort by the Bucs that I saw, at least what I watched on tape. So, you know, there is that feeling of, hey, what looked to be a pretty strong suit has now kind of been watered down and beaten down. And I'll tell you guys, The feeling around here with Kyle Long, who is, you know, three-time Pro Bowler, you know, everybody, you know, knows his dad, everybody knows his brother, and this is a great player whose career right now suddenly is in doubt. I'm not saying he's never going to play again. I'm saying that we may never see the dominant Kyle Long that we have in the past. He's lost weight. He's been banged up, and you could just sort of see his body language hasn't been great when I've been over at the facility.
What is the tastier matchup here? And I think I will have to allow yes as an acceptable answer. Is it Bud Dupree against a guy like Bobby Massey there? Is it T.J. Watt versus a guy such as Leno, or is it Cam Hayward going against maybe a not 100% Compton?
Yeah, I mean, and you guys can tell me what Watt's status is. I haven't heard the latest. I assume that there's at least a chance he's going to play now, which is great for the Steelers. But what I've seen from Hayward the first two games has been just phenomenal. I mean, he looks incredible out there. And especially week one, you know, they were able to rush three a few times and still get pressure up the middle with him. And so I think – just my guess is, and not taking anything away from the outside guys, but I suspect that Cam Hayward's going to give them a little bit of trouble. And we saw some plays in the Falcons game where they got interior pressure as well, you know, whether it was Grady Jackson or Poe or one of those guys. It was more concerning, even though the big sack on Sunday against the Bucs came from Spence on the outside. You know, he kind of went right around Leno and was able to make that play and bend the edge. My guess is that the real concern is blocking Hayward inside.
Yeah, Hayward was fantastic, I thought, last week as well. As Mike said in his press conference yesterday, maybe he didn't show up on the stat sheet, but really disruptive in what he did. And, you know, we're unsure about Watt, Marcus Gilbert, a couple other guys are questionable for this game, so we'll see how it plays out. Offensively, just finishing up things here, Mike Glennon, you know, we saw him. He actually, he's only 5-15 in his career or something as a starter. One of those wins, he came in with the Bucks and threw a kind of crossing pass in the last minute of the game for about a 45-yard touchdown, and the Bucks beat the Steelers a few years ago. So Glennon's a quarterback. We know what he is. I don't think he's a terrible quarterback. I kind of liked the signing when they signed him. Jordan Howard's the guy I'm interested in. I don't remember him very well at Indiana, and he kind of burst on the scene last year as a fifth-round pick. I mean, I think there are a lot of people who think Jordan Howard is, you know, a top-10 capable back in the NFL. Is he that good, and what's your impression of him?
Yeah, it's funny that, you know, the impression of him has changed dramatically, and it's partially due because of injury. I mean, it, you know, he he got banged up in that first game against the Falcons. Was running pretty well too. I mean, he didn't have an incredible statistical game, but he was effective, you know, and he was a big part of why the Bears were able to stay in that game and ultimately had a chance to win it. But he also dropped a pass at the end zone. It would have been the game winning play essentially, or possibly the game winning play in the final seconds against the Falcons. He dropped a big one. That was the one that everybody kind of pointed to. There was another drop at the goal line. I believe either the next play or the play right after that, I can't quite remember now, but you know, he left that game with kind of a bruised tailbone. And then some people suggested that he may have taken a couple of hard hits that, you know, that may have shook him up otherwise too, that may have been a little fogginess after that game. He left without speaking to reporters, did the same after Sunday's game too. He didn't talk to the media, which is fine. I mean, it's just, you know, I'm not trying to throw him under the bus or anything. I'm just saying we haven't heard from him as to why he hasn't been the same back the last six quarters. And part of it is that offensive line that we talked about. But I also think he took a couple of shots in week one that took a little out of him. And people saw Tariq Cohen, the exciting rookie out of NCA&T, and people said, hey, look, Cohen was actually drafted higher than Howard was. Fourth-round pick versus fifth-rounder, is he the future? You know, so there's this debate. Realistically, they can find a role for both of them. But the question is, how healthy is Howard right now? He's a big back. He's got a little bit of juice to him. He's got some light feet. I don't know that he's special, but he ran very, very effectively in the second half of last season. So I guess there's been a little bit of a doubt cast on him because of just sort of the slow start and the injuries right now.
And for those who haven't seen Bears highlights this year and probably never saw Tariq Cohen at North Carolina A&T, he's 5'6". I mean, he's a little fire hydrant type of back. I'm not sure, you know, everybody will make the Darren Sproles comparison, but I mean, he's a true running back, right? He can be a running back, but I don't know what the right NFL comparison is.
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of thought, okay, let's not put him in that Sproles category quite yet, because Darren Sproles is unique. I mean, there's just nobody like him. You know, Steelers fans will remember Amos Zeroway. You know, if you remember the kid for the Arizona Cardinals a couple years ago, three names with a hyphen, I'm blanking on it now, but LaRod Stevens Howling, that's the guy.
A pit kid.
Yeah, pit kid, that's right. I was trying to think where he was, right. So I have two local connections that'll kind of remind you of him. I mean, they've given him about 12 nicknames since he's gotten here. He's shifty. he's tough. He made a play in college last year, guys, that I don't know, maybe one or two of your listeners saw the game. It was the Kent State game where, you know, they're like the quarterback fumbles it. He races around 10 yards, grabs it, and turns it into a 30-yard gain. It was just insane. I mean, he made these plays time and time again. And even though he fumbled on Sunday on a punt return, they're pretty darn excited about him and think he could be pretty intriguing.
When you flip over to the defensive side of the ball with the Bears, obviously with Fox, they like to run at 3-4, but in today's NFL with so many 3 and 4 wide receiver sets now, we see teams running 75-80% nickel. How is this really affecting them? What are you seeing when they run a lot of nickel there? Where the weakness is? They gave up, I think, 4 or 5 explosive plays to the Falcons in week one, but they turn around in the game against the Buccaneers. I think they only gave up one explosive play.
Yeah, that's a good point you just made, because, you know, there were some defensive miscues in that Falcons game, especially in the second half, where the big 88-yard touchdown by Austin Hooper. I mean, you know, you don't see 6'6" tight ends running free in the secondary with like nobody around them for 20 yards. So, you know, who was to blame for that play? I don't know. But Danny Trevathan got banged up in that one. Danny Trevathan had just come back from injury. That was what was going on. Jarrell Freeman, I should say, who's now on IR, he had suffered a concussion in the game. He was the guy with the radio unit in his helmet and was making the defensive calls. There's some debate about whether he may not have called it right. Maybe people didn't hear him correctly. You know, it could have been Eddie Jackson, the rookie safety out of Bama. Maybe he didn't play his assignment right. Nobody has said exactly what was supposed to happen. All I know is that there were, like you said, probably of those four plays, two or three of them were probably defensive miscommunications. I think what they're doing now, Trevathan back from injury, you know, they've got this kid, Nick Kwiatkowski, that you guys have probably seen close to home, West Virginia kid who's sort of a, you know, hustle, run around kind of guy. You know, he hasn't necessarily proven himself to be a three down backer. So they're taking one of those inside guys off the field. So it's kind of a 3-3-5, I guess, but they have the outside rushers who can come towards the ball. So their front three is really good. I'm curious to see if Le'Veon can get going against what looks like a very good run stopping unit. I mean, Eddie Goldman is a load in the middle. You know, Mitch Unrein's kind of the workhorse guy. You know, Jonathan Bullard from Florida. Akeem Hicks has just been, at times, really unblockable. So their front three has been very good. And the one guy that everyone's waiting to get going is Leonard Floyd. He had a great, great training camp. Hasn't quite put that pass rush juice on display yet, though.
I was going to ask you about Floyd, but you answered that for me, so I'll switch real quick.
Yeah.
Is Kyle Fuller going to be able to turn this thing around and you know, Prince Amukamara? We know the injury bug situation with him over the years. It looks like it got a hold of him again right now. Should we expect Fuller to start and Amukamara to be inactive?
Yeah, that's the question. And you know, Amukamara's had injuries throughout his career. I mean, it's funny because, you know, the one issue, well, I shouldn't say the one issue, the two big issues the Bears have had in recent years have been not enough interceptions, not forcing turnovers, but especially interceptions. They had the fewest turnovers of any NFL team, I believe, in history last year. It's not, you know, the modern era or anything like that, but, you know, nothing in week one. I don't know if they forced one Sunday. I can't honestly remember, but may have been one. So this is not a big play unit. And so they were looking this offseason for defensive backs who could make plays. Well, Amukamara has never been a big playmaker. I mean, that's the one problem. He's a good cover guy. He just has never been an interceptor. The other issue with him has also been an issue with the Bears' health. They've had more soft tissue injuries the last 3-4 years than any team I can ever remember. So, you know, they get a guy who, in theory, can help them, but also sort of is along the same lines of the same problems they've had in recent seasons. So, yeah, it remains to be seen how much he's going to be able to help. Fuller has been kind of in and out of the doghouse, had a pretty good camp. He sort of reboosted his stock up a little bit after being a first-round pick. You know, generally speaking, the coverage has not been terrible at cornerback this year. I thought it would be worse through two games, but it's been somewhat respectable in a lot of cases. Marcus Cooper has actually been the guy who's been a little weaker than it hoped.
Special teams, anything of note?
Yeah, I mean, Cohen on punt returns, he had the fumble, but he's the guy who could make a play. I mean, that's really the one. And I know the Steelers have obviously had two really big special teams plays in two games. And, you know, the stop on fourth down with the fake and, you know, the block in week one. And, you know, I would say, generally speaking, these are pretty good special teams, but not outstanding ones. I mean, Connor Barth, you know, has answered the call so far, a kicker. He beat out Roberto Aguayo. Pat O'Donnell for years, last couple of seasons has been sort of ripped. He has a big leg, but he doesn't know what to do with it. But he's been pretty good so far as well. So this is not the great Dave Tobe, you know, Devin Hester special teams units, Daniel Manning of 10 years ago. This is a solid group, but nothing that's going to blow your hair back.
So Vegas has Steelers 7.5. It feels right to me. You know the story for the Steelers over the, you know, you look at the past 3 or 4 years, a couple things have been in play. One is they've obviously, Ben particularly has struggled on the road versus home. He's been a much better home quarterback. And while it hasn't happened of late, over the past couple seasons, the Steelers have tended to play down to their opponents, and they've occasionally lost games where they've been, you know, touchdown or more favorites on the road. What do you have, and what do the Bears have to do to win this game?
Yeah, like, I don't see a Miami Dolphins 2016 situation happening.
Right.
Here. Like, could I see the Steelers maybe coming out a little slowly or, you know, whatever? Sure. You know, absolutely. That old road thing, and maybe Ben isn't, you know, screaming passes right off the first snap. But I feel like they're just a better football team top to bottom than the Chicago Bears right now. And the Bears, it's not like their home field advantage has been great. I mean, for three plus seasons now, their record in Chicago has been terrible. I mean, one of the worst in football, maybe the worst. So, yeah, it doesn't feel like this is one of those trap game situations to me. I do feel like the Steelers come in here and kind of assert their will. I think everybody's sort of holding their breath and waiting for Le'Veon Bell to break out. Will he do it in this game? I would say this. If he does, I suspect he would do it as a receiver more than as a runner, because I know it's been tough getting him the ball as a pass catcher so far, 7 catches, 19 yards or whatever it is. I have a feeling they might have something drawn up for this game where they can kind of exploit those linebackers, get those safeties off their marks with Bell as a pass catcher. That's my game prediction out there.
Steelers by more or less than a touchdown.
Yeah, I'm going to go 10 to 14 points somewhere in there. I mean, I'm not a betting guy, but I feel like they can come in here and win pretty handily. Even if the game might feel close like that week one game did. I mean, the Falcons were clearly the better team, in my opinion, in week one. They just were a little hesitant. If the Steelers can push the gas down, I think they can win by double digits.
Eric, man, awesome stuff. Great, great analysis as always, and always fun to talk to you. Hope the kids are doing well, and we'll catch up down the road. Yeah.
Sounds good, boys. I'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Okay, Dave, always great stuff from Eric. And as I mentioned at the top, you can follow him on Twitter at Eric, @Eric_Edholm. Pro Football Weekly, Fan Rag Sports. He's a great follow on Twitter, so check him out. And good insights there.
Absolutely. Always enjoy talking to him. He has a long history of work, not only covering the Bears, but kind of national as well there. David, while we were on the line with Eric, the Steelers made a practice squad transaction. They signed Jake Rogers, who was with the team during training camp and all, to their practice squad, and they released wide receiver Justin Thomas. Now, people say, okay, thanks for that, Dave, but what's the significance? Well, the significance is you got Marcus Gilbert dealing with that hamstring right now. And they need the extra body, extra tackle in there in Jake Rogers. So that's definitely something to watch. I would expect maybe Gilbert to be a do not practice, at least on Wednesday.
Yep.
And I think Thursday becomes the big day with him, possibly. If he's unable to go on Wednesday and Thursday, obviously a guy like Gilbert can go on Friday and still play. But this is just yet an early sign that perhaps a guy like Chris Hubbard might have to start at right tackle this week.
Yeah, and I mentioned yesterday while Mike was talking, I thought the way he said it, he said at the time, we expect Gilbert to be limited early in the week. And I've said this a million times, if you have a pulled muscle, and apparently that's what Gilbert has, it's some strain to a pull with that hamstring, it's just very difficult to have that be 100% within a week. And if he's not able to go these couple days, typically, even though Gilbert's a longtime vet, Mike likes guys to get reps. So if he got the walkthrough on Friday, maybe that would be enough. But I would be surprised if he doesn't go Wednesday and Thursday. And Dave, I also was doing a little research on the Timmons situation, and Omar Kelly, who's a beat writer for the Dolphins, wrote about it this way in terms of the money. Releasing Timmons would create, as you mentioned, a little over $11 million in dead cap space. However, going AWOL could potentially void his contract, getting the Dolphins off the hook for the $4.5 million he's guaranteed in 2018. Timmons might also be forced to return the $5.5 million in signing bonus he received when he signed the two-year deal in March, but that decision would likely be determined by an arbitration hearing. So all up in the air with Lawrence Timmons, and we'll see how that goes going forward.
Yeah, I'll be surprised if it's the full signing bonus that Timmons has to give back, David. I really, really will. Now, the $4-something million of the $5-something million that he was scheduled to make in 2018, I can understand that guarantee possibly being wiped out there, and the Dolphins getting off the hook there, and maybe 4 weeks or whatever of the signing bonus proration for four games. But that full signing bonus, yeah, I don't know about that. And look, Omar, hat tip to Omar. He's been covering the Dolphins a long time, but David, he's not always fact based. If you know what I'm saying there, when it comes to him. One interesting note: if Gilbert is down, And if Hawkins is unable to go, and it, you know, kind of trending that way, it looks like Matt Filer might be the guy to dress in place of Gilbert and kind of serve as maybe your emergency tackle there. So
and that's a good point when we're talking about inactives. I was saying Gilbert or Watt, and obviously if it's Gilbert, then you got to take one of the offensive linemen is going to play, and that still creates a spot for somebody to be down. So. Good point there.
I'll keep my James Harrison inactive tinfoil hat close, just in case. Folks, right. Hey, always, thanks for everybody for chiming in, letting us know where you are outside the country and listening to the show. It really means a lot to us. You can follow me on Twitter, @CedarsDepot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter, @DavidMTodd. Follow the show, @TerriblePodcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Send David nasty emails like one fella did. this past week, I get to see those replies and it fires me up like nobody's business as well too. With that, for those of you that don't hate us, go to SteelersDepot.com, hit that donate button up right navigational bar, and you can securely donate some money to us. David, that's all I got, and not sure if you'll be with me on Friday. If you are, great. If not, Alex Cazora will be with me.
Yep, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.